Hey, this is Alan C. Gardner from Bad Bad Men, and you're listening to Extra Features Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 262. Oh my God. I'm Kevin.
I'm Betty White.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug.
Still and forevermore, the intern apparently.
So, intern.
Yes.
Since you're back, we call this like Electric Boogaloo Intern 2.
Call it whatever you want.
I don't know if that was allowed.
Don't really care.
Bob's Return 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Now somebody opened the vault and I stepped out.
Oh,
that was awesome. You've lost like 50 pounds. You're looking great.
Thank you.
I think you should go back in the vault and lose another 50. Man, you'd be like, we wouldn't recognize you.
How about I go back in the vault and lose another 250?
It'd be good. I wouldn't want that from you.
I'm not talking about me.
Oh, me? That's not very nice.
Revenge is a bitch, isn't it?
Yeah, until I saw your face.
Oh, best served cold.
Where'd he go over here? Oh, there he is.
Speaking of revenge, I mean, can we get revenge of the writers of our first film up today? It's a bit of a cluster, isn't it?
Yes.
They put their bracelets together and didn't deflect anything.
Yeah, we're going to have to tell the truth on this one. Wonder Woman 1984, directed by Patty Jenkins, starring Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, Kristen Wiig, Pedro Pascal, Robin Wright, and Connie Nielsen.
Really? Is it really starring them? They're not even there.
No, I mean, they're just, what, the prologue that wasn't even needed?
Yeah, that's what they were really there.
Yeah. Just to get it over the 2:30 mark, you know what I mean?
Well, because that's what I wanted. I thought they were vying for the new Kissing Booth record of mundane films extending themselves way too long.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this runs longer than Goodfellas, and that's a problem when you're not good.
Does it?
Yeah, it's like 2 minutes shorter than Goodfellas.
Ah, okay.
Or 2 minutes over, Goodfellas. I can't remember. Look at the running times. They're very close. So, Mr. Honor, are you up first?
All right, I'll go if you want. I actually didn't hate this movie. I'm not saying it was good, but I didn't hate it. I actually liked the opening on Themyscira. I thought it was kind of fun. It brought action to the beginning that was missing throughout a lot of the film. Probably the biggest complaint I have about this movie is I think it was hurt by COVID-19 more than any other film this year. Patty Jenkins said that she wanted to do something different with the ending, so that's why there's no big fight between Max and Wonder Woman. It's Wonder Woman talking and the power of the truth. I think that would have been a lot better had there been five other superhero movies that come out this year. The fact that there was really only Harley Quinn at the beginning of the year, Wonder Woman at the end, the lack of action really hurt this film, I felt. I think if there had been all the Marvel films, Eternals, Black Widow, with their big spectacle action, the lack of action might have stood out a little more and be seen as different. Here it was just kind of dull. It just made the ending kind of dull to me.
Yeah, that's fair, because, I mean, everybody would want action. It's like, okay, this is the only superhero movie this year, and this is what we get. Okay.
That's a good point. I guess I'm kind of in Doug's boat. I didn't hate this. I liked a lot of parts of this. I did enjoy the beginning. My problem is I just find it's a little too long for the storyline they were getting. It just seemed to keep extending. And Maxwell Lord didn't interest me in any way. I just thought he was a little too hammy. I wanted more Cheetah. I thought she was very underutilized. I liked the scenes with Cheetah. Those were my favorite scenes in the Smithsonian. I liked the beginning when the bank, the jewel thieves are coming out of the jewelry store robbery. I thought was really good. Like, parts of this film I actually like. Kevin gave me shit for giving me too high a score on my Twitter account. That's Extra Features on PC on Twitter. if you want to know what I'm up to. And Evan, I like parts of this. I like parts of this. I like that stupid scene when she's fighting the army for no apparent reason and saving those kids. I kind of enjoyed that. I just hated the end. I really did not enjoy that sort of, it's over and everything goes back to happiness. I'm like, well, that's it. The Steve Trevor I thought was hammered in there way too much. I didn't think that was needed anyway. Why do we need Steve Trevor? I still can't figure that out.
That was her wish.
Right. Well, I get that.
I know what you mean.
But couldn't it just be Steve Trevor, not Kevin as Steve Trevor, or Doug as Steve Trevor, or me as Steve Trevor? Couldn't he just be Steve Trevor and just magically show up like that wall did, or anything else has happened? When he needs staff, they just magically show up. They're not other people posing as his staff. Those are real people. So I thought a little problem with that. I didn't really have any issues with the invisible jet scene.
Oh, that was
kind of weird. Stuff like that. I mean, I'm not saying it's great, but it entertained me. It's DC, so I kind of put them at a lower level than Marvel. You know, I hold Marvel to a much higher level because I think they're supposed to be better films. And DC, I'm kind of like, okay, if it entertains me, it gets a 6. Marvel film like this probably would have got a 4. And I'm very honest about that, that I don't hold DC the same standard as Marvel. It just has to somewhat entertain me. So more Christian Wiig, less stupid endings, and Pedro Pascal was a little too much for me. And I found him kind of bland. I wish he put the helmet back on, became the Mandalorian halfway through, and I think I would have liked it a little bit better.
Okay. I didn't hate this, but I feel like they already had their like high fantasy kind of like big movie with Shazam, just big as superheroes, and it's just like, and now it's just a wishing object, and I just kind of I like high fantasy, but it's just kind of silly to me. I love the first one. I liked a bit of this, like some of the action, but yeah, the ending. Just really underwhelming. Pedro Pascal is kind of a boring villain. I got a lot, like, visually and with the villain, I got a lot of, like, Kingsman 2 vibes. Like, this is the Kingsman 2 of the DCU universe. It was just how boring Julianne Moore was in that one and just how over the top, in a way. And, I mean, Sorry. Simon, can I say what you put?
No.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, no.
I'm
but
not
no.
paying attention to what he's doing.
No. He sent me a DM. That's just an inside joke. But yeah, no, yeah. Look, Cheetah, yeah. I like Kristen Wiig, but. I kind of got annoyed when she was like, ooh, no, I want this power. I want to maintain this power. I mean, it's totally true to the character, but it's just meh. I mean, not terrible, but just, yeah, like that what Doug was saying, I think that's why it's so underwhelming that it's like, this is the one big one this year and this is what we get. Kind of like Thor, the Dark World of this DCEU right now. And that's saying a lot, I think.
Bob?
Oh, okay. I have to agree with the three of you so far because, like, the movie started out with so much promise. I saw this is probably why Simon says, I don't watch previews or trailers. And I watched the preview and I thought, okay, then we're going to get a good villain in Cheetah because that's what it was showing. And I thought, and then when I got to there, I got, okay, Cheetah's in it and I enjoyed the scenes with her in it. But I thought, Maxwell Lord, he's not the best villain. So I was like, the scenes at the island, beautiful scenery, stunts, and then it started to fall apart after that. So I can't say that I liked it. I can't say that I hated it. But like, and the explanation of how it was all wrapped up and solved, it didn't make sense to me. Like I thought, okay, you renounce your wish and it solves everything. I'm like, nope, sorry. And I know Simon gave it a 6?
Yeah,
and his scoring is really rough. His scoring is rougher than mine, and I gave it a 5 because I was on like I was going. You didn't hate it. You didn't. Well, you liked it. I think Doug said didn't like it and didn't hate it either.
I like Gal Gadot. That's like 5 right there just for her.
Yeah.
She was just smoking hot, so I have to give her all the benefit of the doubt I get to anything else.
Yeah. And the reason losing her powers because she wished for Steve, and then as Steve got more and more into her life, her powers started going down. So
no, she lost her powers because Kristen Wiig wanted to be her.
No, she lost them because she risked for Trevor back.
Yeah,
is that why?
Yeah, yes. But also yeah. That I mean, it's fair to be confused about that. To be honest,
yeah, Cheetah was involved in that too, but
yeah, could have been taken away from her power because like Oh, is that the one big thing you were talking about, Simon? I thought you were talking about Cheetah. Sorry. taking the power away and giving it to... sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bob has a cat on his lap right now.
Yeah. It was on my desk. She always supervises while I work.
For those that don't have the visual...
Yeah, we don't need the visual.
Kevin, what are you?
Okay, all right. Shall I start?
Yes, sir.
All right. Who said that the opening sequence was unnecessary?
I did.
What? All right. That was the only part of the movie that is acceptable. Okay. That opening sequence. Yeah. Because it gives you the message of the 2.5-hour movie in 10 minutes.
Yeah,
don't take the shortcut. Always do it right from the start. And that's the whole message of this freaking 2.5-hour overlong bloated mess. Now, all right, I want to be fair because the cast did their job. I like Gal Gadot. She was great as Wonder Woman. The film looks great. My big problem with this film is it was supposed to be out last spring. It came out at Christmas. Nobody freaking watched it between then and now. And noticed the glaring problems with the story, the inconsistency with the stupid magic plot. Okay, so you have to have rules with your magic plots.
Yeah.
And you've got this device that looks like a giant cock, excuse my language, that he absorbs into him. Now Cheetah's wish, her initial wish, and Diana's initial wish were the only ones that were actually done on the stone. Which is why their stuff is different from everybody else's. Everybody else wishes on Maxwell Lord because for some reason you can just absorb magic devices into yourself if you wish it. That makes no sense to me, but whatever. For the sake of logic, let's do it. let's find a satellite that can just beam particles into people's homes and have the magic stuff work. That makes no sense either. To me. We actually establish in the film that you can only wish once, except when we need to turn whatever her name is, Minerva, into Cheetah. Then she gets a second wish. And maybe that's because she wished on the stone initially and not on Maxwell. I don't know. Maxwell Lord, I love that character. That's not Maxwell Lord.
I agree.
That's like stupid Donald Trump. It's like
Donald Trump,
one of the sons.
Yeah, it's Eric Trump as trying to be Donald. There's so many problems. I mean, I don't know who decided that Batman and Robin was the movie to look at when making this movie, because we've got Barbara Minerva playing the Michelle Pfeiffer, Jim Carrey, and Uma Thurman. Geeks to gone bad role that seems to be consistent with most DC movies. Why do you have to be a loser and then become a bad person? Like it's the same thing with all of them. They're nerdy, they're clumsy, then suddenly they're like crazy powerful supervillains by the end of it.
Sure.
That made no sense to me. Like it would have been nice to just establish that Barbara never was a normal person that looked up to Diana and wished to be like her. Instead of having her be this clumsy fool that almost gets raped in the park, all these different things happen to her. Nobody knows who she is, over the top. Like, let's just let her act normally and establish a character.
Like a Make-A-Wish Foundation kind of thing, right?
And that's what this movie is. It's the Maxwell Lord's Max-A-Wish. The Cheetah is a great villain. I don't know what that was. That was Barbara Minerva wishes on a star to become hot, and she does. And then she decides she wants to be an apex predator for some reason. And so she turns into a cheetah for no particular reason.
Shouldn't she be a jaguar? Aren't they faster and more stealth?
I don't know. She could have turned into a bear for all we know. I mean, a bear's an apex predator in their area. Like
polar bear?
A polar bear or a grizzly bear, a shark.
Like something with some teeth, maybe.
She turned into the cheetah because the cheetah is a comic book character that they wanted to use in the movie.
Exactly.
Instead of taking that character and using the origin from the comics or a story from the comics and adapting it to make that a separate character. Like, so now what? Is the cheetah gone? Is all the magic wishes are gone, so she can't be the cheetah anymore. Oh, well.
They may find a way to set it up for the next one. Maybe Angle Man will show up in the next episode.
All right, the Steve Trevor thing, whatever. I don't care so much about the body stuff, and we'll discuss that in another film, actually, that came up, taking over someone's body for your own uses. The fact that he disappears, it's nice to see him back. The whole... I just discovered that I can turn things invisible like my dad. Let me turn the plane invisible. I don't know if it's going to work, but let's try it out. And sure enough, it works on the first try. That's great. And those fighter jets that have double seats, and you can perfectly hear, it's like the quietest fighter jet in the planet. You know, if you've ever seen a fighter jet, they have to wear giant headphones because it's so loud. They'd both be deaf if they'd hopped into that plane. And he's like, I flew planes in 1917, biplanes and stuff like that. So I can figure out how to do a fighter jet in 5 minutes. No problem. I can fly this fighter jet, which has a maximum range of maybe 3,000 miles. Or no, sorry, but 700 miles. I did some research. And when I'm going to fly it across the ocean to Cairo and back without having to worry about refueling. Like, who needs... That's, you know, the simple logic and all that stuff. It's not necessary. It's a Wonder Woman fantasy movie, so you have to accept that it's okay. You know, so what? So what if the plane does stuff it's not supposed to do, right? So they fly to Egypt, they're driving down the road, and they just randomly find Maxwell Lord. There's no...
Come on.
Yeah, if you watch the movie, they go to Egypt, they get in the car, and they're driving down the road, and there he is. They're like, oh, look, there's Maxwell Lord. Oh, let's have a fight.
Are you saying that's never happened to you? Randomly go, that's how I met you, Kevin. We hadn't seen each other in a couple of years. We're randomly walking down the road.
Yeah, well, if I'm going to find you specifically... It would be sheer luck if I found you in Barrie. You know, let's say I fly into the airport and I take a long way and I go to Barrie and I go around. Oh my God, there's Simon. He's in Barrie. Let's stop him on the road.
Butter tarts, man. The Canadian
subculture.
Butter tarts.
So they make this fight. They have this fight on the road, whatever. He gets away. And that's it. They're back in Washington 5 minutes later. In their fighter jet that magically flies across the ocean without fuel. You know, anyway, I'm nitpicking. I am nitpicking, you can't do that. You can't do that with this movie because the whole thing falls apart if you start thinking about it. You just got to say, oh, look, Wonder Woman's pretty. Oh, look at this. Oh, Cheetah's scary. Oh, okay.
I like the costume.
She gets her powers back, right? So we had the 5 minute telegraph that there's this armor in her apartment that she's pieced together. So we learn the story of Aretha, or I can't remember what her name is. The
new, learn that in the first 10 minutes too.
Right. We see her statue in that sequence as well. So she's found the thing. She goes, oh, that's this armor of so-and-so. All right.
Astoria.
Yeah. So Asteria.
Okay.
Which sounds like a virus. And so,
Asteria 19
or Listeria.
Sorry.
So she discovers she can fly, and it's a powerful moment. It's very well done. She's following the helicopter to the island base where the secret device that's going to broadcast everything into the air. And she says, oh, shoot, I better fly all the way back home and get the armor and then fly back. Because, you know,
busy.
Yeah. Why would I want to stop the villains right now before they get established? I want to go home and get my change of clothing so I can come up and have this big, hey, it looks great. No problems there. It's been pointed out that it's unclear. I thought she had chucked her wish when she walked away from Steve Trevor. I thought she said basically she was renouncing her wish. Now, in fact, she doesn't really renounce her wish until she shrugs off the wings and says, you know, I renounce my wish. And that's when she goes back to full power and she no longer needs the armor. So, and of course, that armor that nobody could destroy when Asteria was wearing it, Cheetah can just rip it to shreds with her magic claws. So
Cheetah, man. You're just the apex predator.
And then if all you need with the magic lasso is you just need to touch somebody and then you can join in on their broadcast. So it's something that we should probably consider doing here. Like, I want to lasso Bob's leg and then I can broadcast through him to the rest of the community. Like, apparently the magic lasso has additional broadcasting powers. So anyway, I'm being a jerk.
That's you.
This is a very disappointing Schumacher level effort. That if someone had watched it between May and December and said, let's just tweak the editing a little bit and fix these inconsistencies and maybe clarify what it is that the wish tone does, we'll do better. We'll have a better film.
Do you think they missed out on like test audiences then?
I don't think somebody must have seen it. There were some preview audiences, but
Kevin.
Yeah.
With Maxwell Lord in the comics, I know like he got nosebleeds from his powers. Well, I was just going to ask you, like, that's not the same powers he has with this, because his health is deteriorating, but he doesn't have the nosebleed. He does. He has a little bit of nosebleed.
He's absorbed the magic Dreamstone, which is the weapon of another Justice League villain, Dr. Destiny. That's actually his weapon. So he's absorbed it into himself, and I guess it's sucking the life force out of him the more he uses it.
Right.
So he wishes that everybody give their energy to him, which is why he restores himself. Now, in the comics, it turns out Maxwell Lord has the metagene, which allows you to be a superhero. And his power is that he can suggest. He does the push power, basically. Yep. He'll say, you know, Bob, I think you look pretty hungry, don't you think? And then my nose would bleed and you'd be like,
go for a sandwich.
Oh, man, I'm pretty hungry. I think I'll go get something to eat.
Okay.
So that's basically Maxwell Lord's power. It would be like, I go to Simon and said, Simon, I think you want to drive to the store and get some beer. And Simon would be like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, really? No, really? You really want to do that? My nose will bleed. Simon will hop in the car and grab some beer.
Oh, so basically Cabin in the Woods. And then the voice saying, Marty, you really want to go for a walk right now? And he's like, no. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go for a walk.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Kevin, do you have a soul?
Apparently not after watching that movie.
That was my point.
Yeah. I was going to say that Wonder Woman 84 was 5 minutes longer than Goodfellas, but Kevin's talk about it was like 10 minutes longer. Okay. We're going to Soul?
Sure.
Okay. Directed by Pete Docter and co-directed by Kent Powers, voiced by Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, Graham Norton, Rachel House, Alice Braga, Richard Iodade, Questlove, Angela Bassett, and David Diggs.
So, I guess I could start with Soul. Wow. This is what I love about Pixar. They get it. They totally, Pink Doctor, every time I watch one of these films, no matter what it is, he drags me in. This world looks real to me. It looks like you could actually live in this world. I could see myself as a cartoon character wandering around here, having these conversations with my barber, going to, when I die, hopefully upstairs, but maybe not. Maybe I'll go downstairs, but that's my problem. Or maybe I'll be one of those people wandering around lost souls. I think this film has great depth. I love the concept. It made me laugh at times. The cat was great when they come back. The voice acting is so strong in it. I love the music. I try to find fault with this film, and it's really tough for me to find fault other than it's a little too kiddish for me. And that's not even a fault with the film. I really loved it. It's a little kiddish at times.
Wow.
I love the scene when the guy that captains the boat and they see him on the street and he's flipping the sign 4,000 times. Brilliant. It's just when I watch a Pixar film, and I didn't get this from Onward, I want to be, I guess the word is amused. I want them to show me what I have not seen or not thought of.
You want to be and entertained?
Beyond entertained.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman can mildly entertain me. This thing blew me away. Like, I just think they get it. They understand how to create a story. Like, Wonder Woman had a team of writers and makes crap. This has a team of writers and makes utter brilliance. It gets it. It takes a basic story, and there's a lot to the story. No. But they have a richness I don't see in any other cartoons I watch. It's their world building. It's phenomenal every single time from Pete Docter. And this film's just amazing. That's why it was number three on my list for this year.
I'll go off of that. I think it was on my number. Was it my number three or number two? Either way. Yeah, I love this one too. I love the world building. I don't know if I got the sense that it was too kiddish at times. And if it was, I thought it was funny regardless. So like the bit with the HE double hockey sticks, I thought that, and it's like, hell, hell, hell. I thought that was really funny. I love the voice acting. I didn't even realize it was Tina. If I didn't know it was Tina Fey, I don't think I would have placed her voice. I love Rachel House as Terry. She's very funny. I think you saw her recently in Real Life, Simon, in a movie in Penguin Bloom. She's the surf instructor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I love the characters. I love Moonwind. I love the music. I laughed a lot. I definitely cried. Even at the music. Cause I just think the music is so powerful. And this movie, I love Onward, but this movie definitely put
Onward better than Onward.
Oh, for sure. It definitely put it lower on my top 10 list, even though I still had Onward in my top 10 list. Great world building. Like you said, Simon, it's something that you can see yourself in, like with the conversations and just how the writers and Ken Powers as well as Pete Docter, they just understand people and just understand what makes them tick. And I think that's what makes this just...
Sorry, just to pick up on your point. I think... they make their cartoon world seem real for us watching it.
For sure.
We actually see real life in them. It's not like watching, Over the Moon. It's a very kiddish cartoon. It's amazing, but I don't feel I live in that world.
Sure.
I feel Soul in real life could be happening. Not that it could, but in my mind, it tricks me going, yeah, this could be happening. Yeah.
Same.
Doug could be right now wandering around somewhere else, and he could be controlled by one of the Terries or something, or number 21, and I would never know.
Yeah, one of us could be on autopilot, have our lost soul somewhere, right?
Oh, that's me daily, yeah. So I'm quite used to it. I think I fell down about 15 holes this week.
But yeah, the same. Yeah, no, what you're saying, the same way, Inside Out feels so real, the other Doctor film.
I was going to say that, the Inside Out was the same thing, and they're making an Inside Out too, apparently.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Nice.
And your opinions on Soul, intern?
Oh, I thought Doug was going first before
intern.
Me.
Intern.
Okay, I'll go if you want. You can go.
Sure.
Canadian standoff.
Okay.
Okay.
Canadian standoff with an American and a Canadian.
I gotta agree. Huh?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, I gotta agree with Daniel and Simon because Soul. I just looked back and it did make my top five, but it could have been anywhere in the top five. I like the sound. I like the everything you mentioned, I liked. And Daniel said it made certain scenes made you cry. And say the same thing happened here. I'm going to say that I don't care, because there's certain movies where that'll happen for me, and this was one of them. And the music was really good.
No shame at crying at films.
Yeah, some people make you feel shame for doing that.
Cool. It's okay. Go on.
I mean, I love this movie. I thought it was great. One thing I really liked was that they didn't hammer home what I forget the character's name now. It's been a while since I watched it. Jamie Foxx's character.
Joe Gardner.
Yeah, that he wasn't put on Earth to be a jazz musician. He was actually on Earth to teach. I love that they didn't go that cliched route. But I'll go against the grain. I'll say something negative about it here. I didn't really care for the character of 22.
No, I don't think you're supposed to.
I thought it was I really much would have rather focused more on Joe throughout the whole film than 22. That's just a minor gripe. I know she's not the main character. It is still Joe's story, but that is my one gripe. She felt more like a caricature than an actual character. She was just there as a plot device, not an actual character to me.
Okay.
I have to agree with everything you said, but I think that's why that character works, because without her, we don't get the depth from Joe, from the barber, his mom, his life. Like, that's our insight into all that. It's through that character not knowing anything, and we're accepting that Joel doesn't know anything. Yeah. So Joel he's teaching and he's learning too at the same time.
Yeah, and I like.
I just wanted more of the pirate guy. He was my favorite. The guy riding the pirate boat's like my hero. I want him on a T-shirt.
I gotta say one more thing that I missed it. I forgot about when he comes back as what? When he comes back as the cat, like, and he's watching. What is it? 21 talk to the 22. Barber. 22, whatever. And he's listening to the conversation, and the cat's eyes are opening as wide, and I'm going, he's really paying attention to what's going on, and that really caught me too.
Yeah. Again, I think that is the point with 22, just the way that she sees the role and he realizes that he hasn't caught on to all this. And I like that dynamic a lot. Yeah. And just with opening his eyes. And if that is a story device, I think it's an effective story device as a character.
Yeah.
I think.
So I'm not sure what more I can add. This was number one on my top 10 list of last year. Fantastic movie. In fact, I think this skews older than a lot of the other Pixar films because it wrestles with some pretty heavy concepts of life and death that I think would go over. Simon, did you watch it with your kids?
I was supposed to, and they bailed on me.
Yeah, you see, I think that's the feeling I get is that I was supposed to watch it with my niece and nephew, and they just weren't interested. They started watching, and they were like, "Yeah, not really. Didn't work for them." And, if you're five, I don't think you want to start wrestling with the concept of what happens to you when you die. Where do you go? What happens to your soul? Are you maybe – I don't know. I think I just – it was very well done. I think it's a movement towards a more adult story for the future. They can start doing more adult stories with their films, not just kiddie focused like Cars. But yeah, I mean, great casting. Love the music. Love the concepts. I think 22. I agree. She's very one dimensional, but she learns. Here's someone who does not want to be alive under any circumstance. She wants to avoid, she can't stand the idea of being mortal and dealing with the world that we live in. And Joe teaches her through his own life and family and friends that this is something worth trying out.
Sounds like you, Kevin, trying to teach you to be nicer to people.
Yeah, I often fail. And then I'm back and on the road to the afterlife. So,
just so you know, mm-hmm. Doug, did you get to talk about this? You did, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
I interrupted him.
So maybe with the vaccine coming out, we'll maybe get you to a happier season this summer.
Happiest season directed by Cleo Duvall, starring Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, Alison Brie, Dan Levy, Mary Steenburgen, Victor Garber, Mary Holland, and Aubrey Plaza.
Who's up, Kevin?
Sure, I'll start off on this one. So it's nothing that we haven't seen before as far as holiday movies and comedies of error and lying to parents and things like that. I think the only difference is that the emphasis is on a lesbian couple as the stars of the film. So, I think one of the ways we accept everybody is by normalizing stories. And so that didn't, like, to me, that wasn't an issue here with this movie at all. I mean, I could accept that the two women were happy with each other and then one was hiding from her family and I actually think she should have ended up with Aubrey Plaza as opposed to Mackenzie Davis. But anyway, and then we brought in hot star, the moment from Schitt's Creek,
Dan Levy.
Levy's son.
Dan Levy. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, overall, it was just another dumb Christmas movie with comedy of errors and people hiding and nothing exceptional.
Hold on. Ed Mary Steamer, and that's exceptional right there.
No.
Oh, no.
Ted Danson disagrees.
Sorry, Mary Steenburgen.
Sorry.
I'll pick up where Kevin left off. I 100% agree with you. She should have left this relationship halfway through the movie numerous times. I couldn't figure out why
Christian
was staying with Erica. I'm like, this woman has nothing to offer her. She knows what she wants. She's happy. She's doing what she's doing. She's like, oh, we're going to meet your parents. Well, they don't know. Why aren't you telling them? Like, how old is Mackenzie Davis? Like, get on this. Not that you need to come out. Just show up and say, hey, this is my girlfriend, and move on with your day.
Yeah.
If your parents can't accept it, too bad for them. It's not their choice. And I just thought this film dwelled on that way too much of nothing. Like, Audrey Plaza was actually, I really enjoyed her in the supporting role in this film. And I liked the parents. The problem is I didn't like the relationship. I couldn't, I guess, buy into it, what I'm looking for. I just thought it was pokey. There's no way this would have happened. They should have broken up at least 20 times.
They kind of did.
Then they got back together because it's a Christmas film. And I'm like, no, they're not getting back together. Christmas Church should have bailed. Dan Levy saves his film, at least somewhat.
Yes.
He's at least funny. I find when he shows up, he breathes some well-needed life in the film for his 10 minutes of show on-screen time, and then goes right back to flat. And Victor Garber is gay, too, in real life. So I'm kind of like, Victor, come on, do something with this. But he's flat, too. I mean, at the end of the movie, he gives up his conservative ways. That's the big clinch. Who cares? Dull. Add to the stack of dull Christmas films.
I love this film. I think I bought into... Okay, buddy. I bought into the... All right, can you talk without you rolling your eyes, sir? I bought into the her not wanting to come out because, I mean, she's scared of what her parents are going to say because he's running for president. So I bought that.
Wasn't it a counselor or something?
It's counselor, something in office. Yeah.
Okay, something in office, either way.
Sorry.
Because she doesn't want that to affect the campaign, and I bought into that as a plot device. I thought Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis had good chemistry. I think Harper is depicted as like a big villain here, Davis's character.
I agree.
And I don't know. I like the story. I like the weird sister.
The one that did the painting.
Very weird sister.
She's the only sort of normal one.
What?
She was the only sort of like, I don't have a problem.
We'll get back to that.
And I like the...
I didn't say normal. I didn't mean normal as in... I meant normal as...
No, I get you. Problem. I get you.
Simon's taking it another way. So.
Go ahead, Daniel.
No, yeah. And I like the combativeness between Bree and Davis. And I just... Very bad upbringing for her. And I got where she was coming from. Though I don't know if they needed to be together in the end. Because obviously... I do agree. Plaza was the best, better option, and I think this is my favorite performance by Plaza. But I don't know. I laughed, got emotional near the end because I bought it, and yeah, I enjoyed it for what it was—a good Christmas film. And I thought it was effective, and I thought it was really well done, and how, and I thought it was moving how Steenburgen and Garber and how she had to talk the dad into getting him on her side. And I buy stories like these and I think it's well written.
Which sister are you referring to? The Allison Brie or the one that writes elf books?
Well, the combative
elf book.
The elf book. She's so underutilized. Like we really don't know why she's in the movie.
She's comic relief for the weird sister, right? She wrote it.
That's the weird sister.
She co-wrote it.
Okay.
Yeah, Mary Holland Cole wrote it.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
Okay.
But we have this weird kooky character that we couldn't figure out why it was in the movie because she wrote it, so they couldn't get it.
Well, yeah.
I think it's a counterbalance for Alison Brie, though, as well.
Yeah, for sure. But I would like a little bit more Alison Brie here. I liked her character a little bit. I think she could have had a little side tangent here with her husband that we kind of get more at the end.
I really thought he was gonna end up being gay. I thought that was
I could have accepted that.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the little twist, but it was just something like something else.
Doug, Kevin, I don't know who's next.
I'll say I loved Mary Holland's character. She always made me laugh in this movie, especially at the end when Victor Garber is saying, you know, I sunk all my money into the campaign. And she's like, don't worry, I'll take care of the family as soon as my book sells. I love that.
Yeah, she does say that.
And then at the end, yeah, that was really good.
It was a cute film. It was kind of light and airy, and that's what you want around the holiday times. Like everybody said, I think Kristen Stewart should have ended up with Aubrey Plaza, but I enjoyed it for what it was. I'm not probably going to revisit it. But I liked Mary Holland.
Okay.
All right. What's next?
Well, it's not been rainy here. It's kind of weird. It's supposed to be snow season.
Hey,
so maybe
I haven't said anything about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had a late spoke.
Hey.
Intern, go ahead.
Okay. I know where Dan is coming from. I bought into it, but like I found it three quarters of the movie, I was depressed. And I bought into Dan Levy's character. He did make it funny because there was one line he said. He says, "You know the fish. Where do you have to go for something like that? Like, I guess I don't know why. Did he kill the fish or something? But yeah. I liked some parts of it. I didn't like other parts of it, and I just thought it was a depressing movie. This would not have made I." Didn't really enjoy it that much, but I can see where Daniel's coming from because I did enjoy parts of it.
Not a Bob movie.
Not a chance.
Okay. Okay, we're going to Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
We are.
Okay, directed by George C. Wolfe, starring Viola Davis, Chadwick Boseman, Homan Domingo, Glenn Turman, Michael Potts, Jeremy Shamos, Johnny Coyne, and Taylor Page.
All right, I'll start. I love the look of the film. I love the cast. There's some amazing performances. The music is fantastic. I don't know if I'd put this on my top 10 of the year after seeing it, but it's very good. Has a fantastic performance from Chadwick Boseman. Some great speeches that he performs. He does something in the end that I don't quite understand how it gets to that point so quickly. And I did not really care for Ma Rainey herself. She's kind of a jerk.
No, I'd say a little bit higher than that, but it works.
All that stuff with her, with that boy, was that her nephew or
yep. I don't know. It was her nephew. Yes.
It was her nephew.
So she demands that he open things up. So he's a stutterer, eventually gets it right. And then she demands that he get paid exactly the same amount as everybody else that performed on the record.
Yes.
When that wasn't agreed upon. And then, I mean, her way of negotiation was interesting. Basically, this is how it is, and I'm walking. Otherwise, do as I want or I'm done.
For sure.
A really interesting film. Who directed this film again?
George C. Wolfe.
George C. Wolfe, yeah, I don't know his work otherwise. But definitely worth watching, worth checking out. They get a sense of the early days of the blues and recording. Life of session musicians and so forth. And how African-American musicians were often ripped off as well. So while Ma Rainey took control and was in charge, the Chadwick Boseman character, you know, basically hands off his songs and someone else makes money with them, whitewashes them. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was good. Very good.
Yeah, I could jump in. I actually, this was my number two movie of the year. I love this film. Like Kevin said, Chadwick Boseman was fantastic. Viola Davis was absolutely amazing in this movie. I think with what you were saying, how she was so demanding of the producers of her record, I think it's because of that that I liked her so much. Mm. Because she knew what she was worth to this company, and she knew the company knew what she was worth. And if they weren't going to give her what she wanted, then she's not going to give them what they need to make money. That's why she's waiting to get her Coke. She wants her nephew to get paid because he has to make money to send back home to his parents. She knew what she was worth, and she was going to fight for it. Chadwick Boseman also knew what he was worth, but he did not fight for what was rightfully his. And his frustration just built up and built up, where he's going at that door that's in their practice room. I watched the documentary that's on Netflix about the making of this. And that door is on the stage play. That there is the door, but the door never opens on the stage.
Oh.
So the opening of the door was George C. Wolfe's contribution to the story. And he said that that represented racism in America.
Running into a brick wall.
Yeah, you finally get the door open. You think you're going somewhere, but there's an obstacle in the way and you can't get out.
Yeah.
I thought this movie was absolutely brilliant. I love the music, love the performances. One of my favorites of the year.
Okay, to pick up on Doug's point, I have to agree with you. I did think the door was racism the whole time. I definitely thought that they felt contained from the door. But I think we haven't even focused on the – I think the most important for the film was the actors, Boseman and I forgot their names. The three other guys. Not Davis. So
Coleman Domingo.
Domingo.
I mean, those scenes in there were my favorite scenes. Until Ma Rainey sang, I love the dialogue in that room. Mm-hmm. They're bouncing it off each other. I thought that was phenomenal conversation. And they're going on about Boseman's shoes, and they're going back over there, and they go to the piano, and Boseman wants to play it his way. They don't want to play it his way. I love that. My only real issue with the film, and it felt like a play. I never felt it had that film quality I wanted. It was well acted, beautifully, but I thought it was very contained because it was a play. I know they tried to change that with the car scene at the beginning with the police. I think they did try to bring me out of the studio, but I think they were entrapped because the play takes place in that one location so much. Mm-hmm. So I felt I was a little trapped in the scene.
So you didn't
loved
like the set
everything
design?
I saw. Pardon? Mm.
You didn't like the set design then?
I do like the set design. I just felt the world was a little small for me, what I wanted.
Okay.
I wanted a little bit more Ma Rainey at the time. Maybe the film could have been an extra 20 minutes, but it can't. It's a stage play. I get that.
Yeah.
They were very contained, and I think that was part of my problem. I wanted to either go 10 minutes longer and show me a bit more. Show me a bit more. Like, I wanted more from this. I loved everything I saw. I just felt unfulfilled after finishing watching it. I enjoyed the film. Just wanted more.
Mm.
And I felt it just didn't give me what I was looking for. It did a great job of world building. So maybe another play after this involving the same thing would give me what I'm looking for. You know, if they just touched, Ma Rainey's in town, and have a totally different thing going on at a different club or a different place. And I think that's what I'm looking for. I mean, I think they did a good job of world building, but not big enough for me for what I was getting. They had so much stuff going on in that conversation that they could have gone on longer or gone on afterwards or maybe even gone on I think more afterwards, I guess, or maybe Ma Rainey a bit more, or maybe Ma Rainey's just a pain in the ass, and that's what I'm supposed to accept and just move on with my day.
That's what she was in real life. In the documentary, it showed she was a rough pain in the ass, like she is.
Well, great, then they hit it on the film perfectly. I like this film a lot. There's nothing wrong with the film. It just I wanted more. I guess is what I'm saying. I want a little bit more world building, but I don't think the play is going to let me have that. And I don't think they were looking for that. I have no complaints. I didn't find it amazing.
Huh.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can get that like for like I said on the top 10 show, plays, films based on plays are kind of hit or miss for me. I can talk. Jeez.
That's all, folks.
I know, right? I hated August Osage County, but like for other film like this year, I bought into The World in One Night in Miami better than this one. For comparison.
Can't wait to get to that one.
Okay. But I love the performances here by both Davis and Bozeman. I completely bought the end of the film, where it was a bit confusing at first, but I was like, okay, like with that final shot, I thought that was very powerful. This is another August Wilson play, and I like this. I enjoy this more than Fences from 2016. I don't really like that one that much. I think I just like the conversations better here. And I liked the music a lot, and the scenes when they're just recording. I thought those things were cool.
I think they were awesome. I love the music. The music is fantastic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh
yes,
or me. Okay, I gotta agree with Doug on this. Like I saw the documentary after as well, but like Viola just transforms herself completely into the role. And she does a great job, as well as Chadwick. I loved every part of it. It was as Doug said, it was my number two as well. I just loved everything about it. Like, and I just realized now that once he got through the door, that he ran into a brick wall. That just hit me now. Like, and Simon said about it was representing racism, and
it hit you like a brick wall.
Huh?
It hit you like a brick wall, Bob?
Thank you. Yes, okay. I just realized what I said there too. But oh gosh, so yes, the brick wall represented racism, but I just thought this was a great film from beginning to end. I love the documentary after I got to see like Ma Rainey when she, like at her highest when the documentary was talking about it, or it showed her, and then it showed like Viola Davis talking about it and everything else, and I just loved it. That's it.
The transformation of Davis is pretty impressive too.
Yeah. Like the teeth, there was teeth, her, the teeth were there. Fat suit. Makeup. The what?
She must have wore a fat suit.
Yeah, because she doesn't look like that.
No.
And the attitude, like Viola's attitude was like totally different. And I'm going, this is really good. And I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's already there. I think she'll win an Oscar. If not, I know she's going to get nominated.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Doug.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever had a war with Grandpa?
All my grandpas are dead. So oh. I can't fight with them.
That got dark. Oh. The War of Grandpa, directed by Tim Hill, starring Robert De Niro, Uma Thurman, Rob Riggle, Oaks Fegley, Laura Moreno, Christopher Walken, Cheech Marin, and Jane Seymour.
Okay, I really want to start with this one. I know Kevin hated this film, but I don't really care because it's on his top 10 worst. I had so much fun with this film. I really was watching so many bad films in a row. Is this film good? No, but I found it very entertaining. So why is Laura Moreno playing a 14-year-old girl or 16-year-old girl when she's 26? It's really one of my big issues.
She still looks 16, I guess.
No, like I'm getting to the point I've had enough for her, because in one movie she's trying to play a love interest for some guy in high school.
Yeah,
that I hear, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done. I think this is just stupid fun. I know Kevin hated it. I mean, it's De Niro playing stupid comedy De Niro. And it's Walken now playing comedy Walken. And to me, that's just kind of fun. I had fun watching this film. It made me laugh a few times. I liked the Christmas party birthday. I thought it was fabulously done. It was very amusing to me. But maybe my problem is I see so much crappy films in a row. And then something comes on that's in focus, and a storyline makes sense, and has Uma Thurman in it, which just never bugs me, having a movie with Uma Thurman in it. And I just needed something light, fun, and family entertainment. And again, my kids were supposed to watch this with me, but no. And bail! I don't get it with my kids. Well, I liked World of the Grandpa. I thought it was a dumb movie. I love the Uber joke that kept making me laugh. The Uber joke. It's silly fun. I think kids can enjoy this. And that's all I have to say about it. Kevin's going to tell us why it's a piece of crap suit. Well, so I'll be waiting.
Well, watch it on a week where you've watched all good films. I rewatch it, you know. Sorry, Kevin, you could go ahead.
Well, this was on my top 10 worst list. I don't remember what position.
Seven.
You know, so many good actors in this film that clearly just must have needed the work that they did this thing. So,
does De Niro ever need work, or he just does everything because he's bored?
I think De Niro just likes to work constantly, so he does whatever gives him money. But Uma Thurman, I can't believe Uma Thurman agreed to star in this. She must just have done it as a favor or something.
No, she's on this list now.
Jane Seymour obviously needs work. Christopher Walken has nothing to do.
H. Barron has nothing to do.
All right, so you take an awful, tragic part of anyone's life. Grandpa's old. He's hurt his leg. He's got to move in. Was it his leg? So for some reason, he can't live alone anymore.
Correct.
And so the family is taking them in. And I'm sure they probably had many conversations beforehand about the kid having to move out of the room so that grandpa could move in. And any kid who loves their grandfather would say, okay, all right, it sucks, but fine. To turn around and make it a war with his grandfather, I thought that was disgusting. I was so disgusted with the premise of this film that any kid would not understand that it's not great for grandpa to have to move in. But the other kids were like, oh, the little girl was like, oh, grandpa's going to live with us. We can play with him, all that stuff. And they clearly loved the grandfather. There was something there. But I just, the whole thing put me right off that it had to become home alone with a family member who loves you.
So funny.
And you love them. And you want to injure them. You want to throw, like, the guy is ancient and you're throwing marbles under his feet. He's going to fucking break his leg. Excuse my language. He's
going to break his neck. And they want to do this, I'm game. Let's kill
him. I will remember that. If your kids, you see your kids listen to the show, and I apologize for the swearing, they should remember that and make sure there's a giant jar of marbles in the room that they put you in so that you can drop it on the floor and trip and hurt yourself.
I would find it funny.
Sorry, Kevin.
I don't have anything more to say about it. Other than
I totally get where Kevin is coming from. I don't think I was disgusted by the premise, but I wanted to punch the little kid in the face, even though I liked him in Pete's Dragon. I think my thing was that the pranks weren't funny. Like the marbles, I was just like, I'm kind of on Kevin's side. Like, oh, okay, that's just it's kind of, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's poor taste, because I mean, it's just, if you can imagine your grandpa in that situation, but it's not that kind of movie, you know. But I didn't really think the pranks were that funny. It's just Home Alone / Jackass with a war with grandpa, and I thought the dodgeball bit scene was funny. I got a little kick out of that.
So good.
Oh yeah, so bad it's good. You know, I mean, I like seeing Cheech. I kind of got a kick out of Walken. But I just, and there was some heart here, but it's just, and I love these mid-2000s kind of premises, but it didn't work for me, I guess. And I just,
that's okay.
Mediocre. And
I'm agreeing with you. It's mediocre.
Yeah. And Laura Morano did not need to be here. She's just here to be like, oh, hey, oh, the house fell apart as I'm about to have sex. Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, like, no, that's not needed.
On her sister's birthday, shouldn't she be at that party helping out, like doing cake, balloons, helping out with the kids? She's ungrateful.
But she thought it was Christmas, not her birthday. On the Christmas birthday, yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm more on Simon's side on this one, I gotta be honest.
Oh, yeah?
Robert De Niro is my all-time favorite actor. And I've seen him be absolutely horrible in films, Hide and Seek, Showtime, stuff like that. He actually wasn't bad in this movie. He was actually acting. I expected to go in and be like Kevin and hate this movie with a passion. But De Niro kind of won me over. I was also won over by Christopher Walken's stunt double riding the Una wheel thing. Because that was obviously stunt double, and I loved it.
That was a stunt double? Are you telling me they fooled me?
Yes.
Are you saying when De Niro falls with the marbles, that was a stunt double too?
No, that was all De Niro.
Now I'm going to take the movie back.
Oh, okay, good.
De Niro does his own stunt.
That's it. Wow. Each of them gets a three now. I'm so pissed.
It wasn't a good movie, but I didn't hate it. I went in fully expecting to hate it, but De Niro kind of won me over.
Come on, that garbage scene with the kids was so bad. I loved every bit of it.
Simon, on your scale, what grade is this? Just curious.
C.
Okay. Yeah, see, like, I give it a 4 out of 10.
I gave it a 6 because it made me laugh.
Okay.
I told you, it was a rough week. You see some of the crap I have to watch. This was the highlight of my week. I was working at Christmas. I need something to cheer me up with this kind of work.
Okay.
Doing my job at Christmas kind of sucks. You know, they let me out of that mailbox occasionally to look for scraps, and that was the week.
And it's kind of funny. Like, me and Kevin are on the same side that I like my spy better than this.
And I think Kevin God, no. Sure. No.
My spy was great compared to this.
I bought both of them.
You bought both of them?
Yes.
You know what?
What?
Go ahead.
Okay. I do agree about the marble part being like, but the movie itself with De Niro, I'm on Doug and Simon's side for that one because I do like Home Alone.
Don't get me wrong. I didn't think he was terrible in the film.
Yeah. No, I know.
I just think the premise was so repugnant to me.
Yeah. Like the marble scene itself was that's not a good idea because he explained why he has the marbles. He explained that every house he built, he found a marble, so he collected them.
I like that aspect. But
fun parts like and De Niro and the kid are going through. Well, you have to have rules in the war. You can't just like it's a war. He says, and the kid says, what? And he says, yeah, you have to rules. So they said no collateral damage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That all falls apart. But I still had fun with the movie. Like I watched it. A while ago, but I bought it recently, and then I said, well, since it's coming up in the podcast, let's watch it again. So I watched it again. I still enjoyed it, but I can see now with the marbles, like I thought, yeah, that's not really a nice idea because he collected the marbles from every house he built. And then when he builds the house, he puts something in. He had a picture of him and his wife, and he puts it in a wall because he says every time there's somebody – like everybody that builds the houses does something different. And this is what he did. So like, I can see your points, Daniel and Kevin, but I still enjoyed the movie.
No, you're totally allowed to, sir.
Thank you. Because it's a stunt double. Now I have to take it back. Huh?
Bob, you need to let him go.
Let him go. I wish I could let him go. Can I actually start with this one?
Sure. The cast list, sir.
You have to read the cast list.
Oh, gosh. No.
Let me do my one job in turn. God. Let him go. Directed by Thomas Bazooka. I'm going to say Bazooka. I don't know. I don't care. Starring Kevin Costner, Diane Lane, Callie Carter, Ryan Bruce, Leslie Manville, Rob Britton and Jeffrey Donovan. Is it the Bezeka? I don't care.
Okay.
It's something. Okay, Bob, you're good to go.
All right. I saw this on a preview, and it's another reason sometimes to not watch previews because like the way it was shown, I thought this was going to be better than it was. This is another depressing movie, and like he dies at the end. Yeah, we spoiled that too. His hand cut off and what?
He dies.
Wow.
But like I thought it'd be a better I thought it would
Pa
be better
Kent
than this.
Died in Superman again?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. He did. Superman's father died. But again.
And did he
die the first time? So anyway, there's another reason not to watch previews, because I thought this would be so much better, but this is another depressing movie. I watched it. I'm going, this is depressing. Although they got their revenge on the family, but the family itself was like, who? Well, I can see some of the people that would be like that, but I just didn't enjoy this film. If I had seen it before, it would have made its worst list, but no.
What?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I'll wait till my turn.
Okay. I'm not changing my mind.
I'm not asking you to.
I know you're not.
I'm waiting for Mr. Honor's opinion to form my own, but no, I have my own.
Oh, my opinion is it's not in my top 10 bottom, but it's close. This movie was was slow. This movie was just slow to begin with. I still don't know exactly how the son died. I'm assuming he was thrown off the horse somehow.
Broke his neck. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just kept going and going, and it just never captured me.
Thank you.
I would have turned it off halfway through if I wasn't watching it for the podcast.
Well, you're more welcome to turn any movie on halfway through during the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, but I'm going to make fun of you for weeks.
Okay,
if you don't finish the film, so that's fine. Turn off any film you want. But once you've told me you watched it halfway through, you're opening yourself up for ridicule.
Well, Eurovision, I only watched the first half hour and couldn't make it, so.
Oh, that's fine. I have no issues with that. I hated that movie.
Doug, please do it.
I just kept on turning on some scenes in that movie, so.
He'll forget about Paddington 2 if you do it, Doug.
Oh, I'm not forgotten about Paddington 2 being number 7 on your top 10 list.
It was number 8. Get your facts close straight, enough. Simon.
Sorry, I'm trying to block it from my mind, Kevin.
Thank you, Doug, for the validation on this.
Yes.
Kevin, do you want to go?
Sure. I'd heard good things about this film. I heard the performances were strong. You know, here's another movie, second one in the row, where the premise is flawed to me, in that I did not agree with the point of the film, which was their daughter-in-law remarried and moved away, and they felt that they had some claim on the grandchild, which, okay, I appreciate their grandparents and they want to see their grandchild, but they find him and they're given access and they're dicks about it. And the whole reason why things escalate so badly with that creepy family is because they're dicks to them. You know, the mother, she wasn't the nicest person, but she was at least trying to establish some rapport grandmother to grandmother at that dish at the Christmas tree.
Sorry, Diane Lane or the Weevil?
Not Diane Lane, the other one.
Okay, Manville? Okay. Yeah.
She was at least trying to, there was some attempt to be nice to them. They were creepy. I mean, they were trying to break into their car. They were doing all this stuff. There was something absolutely wrong with that family, but I also felt that Diane Lane was one of the reasons why things escalated so far and we lose Kevin Costner effectively, first his hand and then his life, is because Diane has taken it from a 3 scenario problem to an 11.
Yeah.
You know, and that put me off the film. I didn't agree with her. And I thought you've made your own mess. And so I don't care what happens. I don't care about the resolution to this problem. That's pretty much it. In fact, I was very disappointed by this film.
I did get the sense that the Weevil family was standoffish. I got the sense of they're like a mafia family. And I don't know if I agree that she was being nice. Because just, I don't know, the way I read into her tone, she was like, oh, okay. Like just the passive aggressiveness of her letting her only see the grandson for 2 minutes. I think I just took
that. Yeah, but that was after 20 minutes of her, no, I don't want to eat your food. Want to eat my food? Yeah. Like, what's wrong with my cooking? You know, I think they were very rude to them as house guests. And sorry.
Kind of. No, no, it's kind of an, I don't know. I guess I just read into it that it was kind of like an unnerving situation. Like mm-hmm. they, I don't, but I, yeah, they have a weird claim on it for mm-hmm. sure. But I enjoyed this. I bought into, I like the emotional power. I like Diane Lane in the film. It's definitely her, like, just your mistakes that cost you the love of your life kind of thing. And I liked mm-hmm. Boo Boo Stewart's character, just the random guy on the horse. And I thought those conversations were interesting. And I don't know if I loved Costner dying, but I enjoyed it generally. And I really liked Jeffrey Donovan, the brother of Manville's character. He was great mm-hmm. in this movie called Villains. I haven't seen a lot of them, but I like him. I've liked what I've seen of him so far. And it's not a great film, but I enjoyed it. I don't think it wouldn't be on my top. It wouldn't be on my bottom. So somewhere in the high middle, I guess.
Wow. I'm going to have to agree with Daniel. I friggin' love this film. I think I loved it the most of any of you guys. I like these kind of films. I like, it reminds me of a lot of Peckinpah films. That's very slow paced. It builds up to a big ending at the end. I do feel this director watched a lot of Peckinpah. I can't remember the movie with Dustin Hoffman.
Straw Dogs?
Straw Dogs. This is very like similar Straw to Dogs. Straw Dogs to me, which I quite... don't get me wrong. Straw Dogs is a much stronger film than this. I'm not comparing. I'm just saying very similar pacing. Yeah, without the Diane Lane character going nuts, there isn't a film here. There really isn't. But I like this kind of intensity. This is my kind of low-budget action film. And I do like these kind of films. I do like the slow burn on this one. Because I find without it, you don't get the tension. And I like the tension in this film. I enjoyed the characters. I mean, they're all unlikable. That's what I liked about it. I have no rooting interest. They could have killed them all, and I would have been fine with it. But I have to agree with Kevin. Diane Lane pushing the baby issue was kind of like, really? Do you really have a claim here? Like, they were trying to be nice to you, and you were just miserable to these people.
Well, they're the other grandparents. I mean, they could argue for access to see them, and they didn't seem unwilling to do that.
No, but the mom was still alive. The mom could have said, no problem, I'll come see you next week, and this film would have been over.
Right.
But
Diane Lane wanted to take the child away from her. That's the way I took it, that she wanted the child.
Right.
I don't understand why you think you're getting this child.
Well, she wanted to get her out of the...
I think the only reason was because the husband beating the kid and hitting the mother. So that's why Diane Lane got so...
The mom's issue.
Right.
I got the sense she wanted out of the situation as well with the Weebos. She's just had to go with them. So that's what I got from it, I suppose.
I agree with you 100% with that. But the problem is Diane Lane went about this the wrong way.
Yeah, but also the mother tells on them.
Yes.
She tells them that they ambushed her at the restaurant and tried to convince her.
I feel like she got pressured into doing that because she was scared, right? That's
maybe
just the victim sense that I got in that way.
Well, yeah,
not maliciously being like, oh, these mother truckers are trying to take me away, you know?
Well, yeah, I got the same sense that Daniel got, that the Weevil family was kind of like a mafia family in that area. They had the cops in their pocket. They had the whole town. So I got the sense that they were like a criminal family that everybody knows if you cross them, something bad's going to happen. So
yeah,
I kind of was okay with Diane Lane being a jerk to them because they were like a criminal family.
I agree with you, Doug. I know. I thought the performances were excellent. I thought it ramped up nicely to the end.
See, I don't know if I agree with that because I'm thinking if you're, let's say you go to Don Corleone's house and you know what he's all about, you don't go in there and start insulting him. If you want something.
I'm talking about the performances here.
No. But Doug was just saying, if they're criminal family, they were something wrong with them and everybody knew there was something secret and they couldn't show them the way to their house. That had to be blindfolded or whatever. They had to be driven there a certain way. But
it just followed them because it could get lost. Yeah.
I mean, if you're in the lion's den, you don't go eat me. You know, you don't throw the steak out for it to bite you. You basically try to play it. You play it by ear and then get out and then assess the situation. I think Diane Lane just went in there and was like, fucking, you people are below me. I don't like you. I don't like the way you treat my grandchild. I want more access. I want all these things. And they were like, you can't come into our house and demand these things. You know, we were trying to be nice. They were trying. I still think they were trying to be at least civil.
I'm not so sure about that. I think they were trying to intimidate and kind of push them around a bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't think, and it's like a small town crime family instead of the Corleones. But also, I didn't really take. I don't know if I took Dailene as arrogance. Did Simon just leave?
Yeah, Simon did. He was so upset with what I was saying.
Yeah, I'll just finish my point. I didn't really take it as arrogance so much as that she's just, maybe like just losing her son is just blinding her a little bit to maybe there's a better way to go about going up.
But it's been a while since her son died, hasn't it? It's been that he's dead months. And buried and
a few and years. I think.
Yeah, she's remarried and
takes and a toll on. Though. I guess I don't know because I mean,
just, but I think they got in the car. They were going looking for a fight. They were packing a gun when they were.
She
he says, "Why are you doing that?" And she says, "Well, you never know what's going to happen." So, was she right to have done it, or was she looking to pick a fight?
I guess just maybe so much pain and just them leaving in the middle of the night that she felt betrayed.
So we're not sure exactly what happened to Simon. It sure is strange that he's not here for the next movie. You almost say it's kind of freaky.
Freaky. Freaking directed by Christopher Landon, starring Vince Vaughn, Catherine.
Wah, wah. Sorry.
Wah, wah, wah. That's an actor name. Wah, wah, wah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Celeste O'Connor, Misha Oshervovich. I should not have written that one down. Kelly Lamore Wilson.
This is a Blumhouse movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Same. Is it same production as Happy Death Day, right?
Blumhouse? I think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
Same director as well.
I'll start. This movie took me by surprise. I actually really liked this. It had the gore effects that I was looking for in Happy Death Day, but didn't get. This one, I got to see Ferris Bueller's best friend get cut in half on a bandsaw.
Right.
And that,
oh, Alan Rock. Yeah, yeah.
That just made me so happy. This movie had a surprisingly high body count. I did it in my head because the kills come in multiples. In the beginning, in the opening, there was four. There were two people in the school. And then there was the three attempted rapists. And then the one at the end, which was the killer himself. Mm-hmm. So surprisingly high body count for this, which was a pleasant surprise for me.
King of Twitter is back. Sorry.
I also thought this was kind of funny. I thought Vince Vaughn just gave a hell of a performance as a teenage girl.
Yep.
And Vince Vaughn's not somebody I'm a big fan of. But in this film, I was really surprised by his comedic talents.
Yeah, I have to agree. I really enjoyed this. There's sometimes a movie comes along that was like that's like wish fulfillment. It's like, okay, this is a movie that I love, but I didn't know that I needed a body swap serial killer film with Vince Vaughn, and just I didn't know I needed him in a horror movie so bad because just his stature alone is just like, okay, yeah, he could be a Jason Voorhees, he could be someone just super tall, like he could be like an iconic serial killer. Like even in the opening scene with the mask on, I thought that was a hell of a way to introduce us to him. I love body swap. I love it when they do it different. I thought Vince Vaughn did a much better job than Newton, I think. Because I think I like Jessica Roth better as like one of Christopher Landon's kind of, not final girls, but just her main stars that he has in Happy Death Day and then in this one.
Happy Death Day was really good.
Yeah. I liked him better when he was doing the emotional side, and it was hilarious when he was like, "Are we gonna kiss right now?" in the back seat with the guy. I was like, "Do you really want to kiss me right now?" With like,
"My hand's Vince, bigger than your whole face."
Like, Vince Vaughn with like yellow teeth. Like I thought that was great. I just thought a lot of creative stuff in here with what they did with it. I really enjoyed it. Like, I like Happy Death Day a bit more, but I love this a lot more than Happy Death Day to You.
Yeah.
Happy Death Day to You is terrible.
For sure. So that's a low bar.
Sorry, is it my turn? I apologize.
No, it's okay. It was just Doug and then I myself who went, so you're good to go.
Oh, okay, so I can talk. Okay, great. This was surprisingly fun. I thought it was going to be a big flaming pile of dog poo that some kid left to my porch on Halloween and set it aflame. And I opened the door. That's what I expected, but no.
Okay, Billy Madison.
It's delightfully fun. I think this is a good premise. It's nice seeing Vince Vaughn branch out and try different things. I mean, Jail Cell 99 or something. I can't remember the name of the film.
Cell Block 99?
Yeah.
That's it. And that, I find Vince Vaughn's at least trying to keep himself relevant in some way. He wants to work. He obviously doesn't need the money. He's rich. But I think it's good. I think he's trying it out, and he's doing these films. And I think these films are fun.
He started off in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
He did. I agree. But then he went to these weird comedies. But now he's gone back to having fun. I think Vince Vaughn is having fun with this role, playing a teenage girl. Who knows he could do it so well? Like, I think I like this premise. I like this film. Is there a lot to say about it? Probably not. It's pretty basic, but it's fun. And sometimes you just want something fun, like when Grandpa falls over with marbles. That's fun to me. So Vince Vaughn hacking people up was fun.
Is this his first horror since Psycho, the Shot for Shot remakes in 98?
Yes. And know what's funny? I have a quick story.
Okay.
In 1998, they were filming Psycho downtown Toronto. I'm pretty sure that's what it was he was here for. And I couldn't find a parking space. Literally could not find. So I dropped my friend off with my Vince Vaughn photo to get signed. She calls me maybe 5 minutes later. I tried a parking space. I said, no, it's just, I got your stuff signed. Come back, pick me up. So I didn't get to meet Vince Vaughn until years later. At the film festival. And this guy is like so tall. It isn't funny. He's like 6'5" almost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the nicest, friendliest guy. So whenever I see him in films, I'm like, I like Vince Vaughn. He's so nice. So, Kevin?
I hate horror movies. I thought, wow, Freaky Friday is a horror movie. Interesting idea. And I love Vince Vaughn in this movie. I think it's the best thing he's done since Dodgeball. So that's, what is that, Dodgeball. 15 or 16 years now since that movie?
I love Dodgeball. One of my favorite comedies.
Me too.
I thought he was fantastic in it as a teenage girl. Not so much as the murderer, but as the, playing a teenage girl in a serial killer's body. And there's some great comedy there. And, just getting through to his friends, that whole sequence when he does the whole whatever song they sing among themselves and...
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fun. Surprising moments, the bits, the backseat of the car when he's having a moment. Can I sit back here with you? Yeah, sure. All right. And then they're having a romantic moment. Does he not realize it's like about to suck face with a serial killer, at least the body, and their souls were united. Great. I loved it. Don't do his Freaky 2.
No.
He's dead. Just dead. Leave it in. No, leave it be.
Yeah, but if he gets hit by lightning when Tommy Jarvis is digging him up, it'll work.
Mm.
I thought he worked well as both the teenage personality and the serial killer version. I bought both sides of that.
He was just doing the standard Michael Myers type of...
Yeah, and I bought that. But just with his stature, I thought that's all he needed to do. And that worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
I was shocked how much I liked it because I saw the title and then when I started watching it, I thought, oh no, not another like Jason Voorhees type movie or the other one, Halloween.
Michael Myers?
Yeah. And I'm going, and then I started watching it and I thought, okay, it's going to be a horror movie. I'm used to this. And then I'm going, wait a minute, that's not a horror movie. And like the body swapping's been done before, like on that's what the TV show, Scott Bakula. Anyway,
Quantum Leap.
Thank you. Anyway, so I thought it was going to be like Jason Voorhees meets Hot Chick meets 17 again. But this turned out like it was.
Please, no more Hot Chick movies. Mm-hmm. No Hot Chick movies allowed to be mentioned.
But that baseball song—that's exactly what they do to prove that it's That is the girl. That's what I thought of. Sorry, Bob. Go on.
That's okay. But I like, and when it turned into a comedy, and with the body count, and you said you, it was reminding you of, Happy Death Day. Happy Death Day. Not Happy Death Day to you, but Happy Death Day. I thought this was like, because it's the same company that does it.
Same director
and
as well.
Vince Vaughn acting as a female girl was fun. And Catherine, like, Catherine Newton's character, like, she's tried to act as like a killer. And I'm looking at both of them. I'm going, they look like they're having fun with these acting as each other. I just enjoyed it. Really, a lot.
Nice. Do you want to watch it every day?
Every
perhaps,
day.
Perhaps, because it was the same thing. Almost the same type of film. Body switching so often.
Every day.
Yes, every day, directed by Michael Succi, starring Anne Gurry Rice, Justice Smith, Debbie Ryan, Owen Teague, Colin Ford, Jacob Batalon, Maria Bello, and Michael Cram.
Kevin?
Why should I start? I don't want to start.
I'll start. Okay. Fuck it. It's my list. I'm going to start this film.
Exactly.
I love this film. This was a surprise. Bob calls me up and says, have you seen this movie every day? I'm like, no? Okay, I'll check it out. Loved it. Absolutely. What a good premise. Something I haven't seen a billion times. Something that actually interests me. I wish they spent a little bit more time on the story other than the body swapping, which seems to be the whole premise. I need a little bit more depth for the main character, but I liked it. I liked seeing the different characters every day. I enjoyed it. I think it was more work better.
There was a bit of a story with them because they get along so well as, cause she knows it's the wandering soul. And
but didn't you want an outcome to this? I know it's Quantum Leap, but I kind of wanted to know why it was happening. I wanted a bit more information, maybe even a wrap up at the end.
I think because A doesn't know himself or herself, I think that works, just that we don't need an explanation for it because he can't explain it and he's the only one that would be able to.
Because he was born that way too, apparently, according to what I understood about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Simon.
I like that. I don't think there's a lot to this film to discuss. I just enjoyed it. I liked all the actors they used. I liked the premise. I loved the library scene. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah.
And I like her trying to find herself. And I think this is a really good, maybe I took it the wrong way. Maybe it's a metaphor for finding herself. Maybe the girl needs to find herself. And maybe teens need to watch this film. And maybe they'll help them out knowing they can be different people and still be the same person and still have friends. Maybe I'm just too old for this film and not seeing the metaphor that the director wanted me to see. Again, I'm reading into a film. But I think it's all there. I think this is a wonderful film. It just lacks a little depth for me and a little bit of focus on why this is happening. And I wanted to know that.
Okay.
That was my big question coming away. I loved it other than wanting to know. So thank you, intern, for pointing me towards this.
Do you want to go, intern? Do you mind if I go?
I want to go. Like, okay. After when, because I saw this on a preview for another film I was watching. I can't remember what, but I said, Simon, have you seen it? This film, it's another body swapping one, but it's a little bit tweaked, a little bit different. It's also based on a book by the same name. And the tagline was different body, different life, every day in love with the same girl. Now, and I noticed some of the things that were going on. They filmed it in Toronto. I recognized Diner because it was across from the school I went to, the college, and I used to work in that area, Sugar Beach. But like, this was, I saw a preview for it and I'm going, I have to watch this. And I watched it just recently, a couple of days ago, yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the movie for what it was because it was good.
Okay. Yeah, I think I watched this last year, but I just didn't recommend it because we weren't making
it.
Yeah,
it's 2018, okay. Right?
Yeah. As far as like young adult romances go, I think this sets itself apart with the soul swapping more so than body swapping. I don't know. But I really enjoy this one. I liked revisiting it. it's better than, I feel like people think it's mediocre, but I buy the romance. I like the ending, just her moving on. I really like Angourie Rice. I think she has a lot of compassion and I just like watching her act and just, I feel her emotions and I think she's charming. And one thing that I like about this film is just some actresses, they can't get chemistry with one actor, but I really think she has some semblance of chemistry with every single person that plays A in this film. And I think that's easiest with Jacob Batalon because they were Batalon, I don't know, because they were in Spider-Man the Far From Home and Homecoming together. And they did boyfriend and girlfriend in the one where Far From Home, right?
Yep.
So that's easily transferable. But no, I just think it's impressive that she has chemistry with pretty much everyone here. And I enjoy it. Not a great script, but it's an entertaining one, I think. And I think it works well.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was okay. It was like, what do Spider-Man actors do on their summer vacation? They do movies like this.
Yeah.
She's good. Angourie Rice is actually very talented. I thought she was great in Far From Home. It'd be nice if they gave her more to do in some of those films. I don't know. This episode has been about body swapping and souls possession, you know, Stephen Trevor inhabiting some random dude's body so Wonder Woman can rape him. And then, and then freaky serial killers and teenage girls swapping bodies so they can, to do what they do best in different ways. And here we have a dead man essentially popping from body to body every day. Dead man being a DC superhero who inhabits bodies. It's the same type of thing. It's just like a wandering soul that has no steady home.
Boston Brand. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, inhabits a body for 24 hours or 12 hours or whatever it ends up being. I don't know. It was an interesting idea of, what do you fall in love with? You know, do you fall in love with a face or do you fall in love with a soul? And so she falls in love with a soul and it's tragic that they can't be together. But A is right because what kind of future would they have? What would happen if A jumped into the body of a married person or someone with a family? How would that work?
Yeah.
You know, so, and it wouldn't be fair to her as far as who would be the father of the child if they had children. Would it be the person that whose body A inhabited and basically hijacks for a day? Or would it be A's child? And you know, are there other things like A in this world? Are there other spirits like this? So maybe.
For sure there is.
Maybe we've discovered a new Marvel Comics character that can inhabit a future movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something
I think
here.
I have that. Okay. Doug, did you speak on this? No.
No, I'll be honest. I didn't get a chance to see this film, but I did love.
Okay, you're good.
I'm not allowed to say I liked Angourie Rice and Nice Guys and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Welcome to.
Just don't say and stuff.
Also, it was weird. Just one more thing. It was weird seeing Owen Teague not be that really, really creepy guy in Stephen King's It, like the creepy bully, Patrick Hofstadter.
Oh, yeah, because I would remember It from 2-3 years ago.
No, the guy that plays the like at the very end of the film of Every Day, the one that. No, I'm trying to tell you who the actor is. The one that she ends up with.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you let me talk, sir, I'm trying to give you a reference.
Ooh. Ooh, feisty.
Oh, no. Feisty standing up for himself. We should be more of that.
That wasn't feisty.
Intern.
What?
Are we all done, guys? Are we finally finished? Did anybody buy anything? Did anybody allowed to leave the house?
Is that Eurovision?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's Yaya Ding Dong. So are we done? Are we finished?
Did we buy anything? Did anybody buy anything?
Yeah.
Ding dong.
Yes, who bought something?
Go ahead.
All about War with Grandpa, that's one. I also bought two WWE things, the Undertaker's Last Ride and the other one, the last match.
Survivor Series.
Yeah. I don't know why I bought it, because you'd probably give it to me anyway. So, there was another one, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, well.
Okay. And if they make it?
The intern returns.
Oh, I haven't talked about what I bought.
Oh, so
yeah,
I
bought. Yeah, what did Kevin buy?
Nobody said anything.
Jeez, well, Bob was talking, and then he just ran over.
I know.
I didn't.
Man, you're awful. I bought the Karate Kid trilogy. Are we still recording, or is it over?
Yeah, we're still recording.
All right, I bought the Karate Kid trilogy so that I could catch up on the backstory for Cobra Kai.
Sure.
What else did I buy? I bought Kingpin. I may have talked about this before. Stargate. Yeah, I think I did. So that was it. Just the Karate Kid trilogy.
Oh, can I say it now?
Hayner, did you buy anything?
I'm still going through my Christmas haul.
It's Connor.
Isn't it Hayner?
No, it's Hayner.
It is, sir. It is Hayner.
Hayner, yes.
Oh, I keep calling him Hayner. You keep saying.
Oh, I also bought the Dwayne Johnson thing.
Being polite, Simon.
Building.
Yes.
It's all right. There's a Hayner Hayner Christmas special on YouTube that people should check out. So if they make it, the intern will return.
The intern returns.
Yes.